Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Friday, August the 30th. And of course, Labor Day coming up on Monday. Traditionally, that has been the beginning or the start of the presidential election, of the election season. And tonight, we're going to be chatting with our good friend, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. And we want to get his thoughts about where this election is as we approach Labor Day, the beginning of the election season. So let me say hello to our good friend, Barry. Barry, how's everything going?
Well, things are going pretty well. We've had a very nice summer so far, but I'm afraid the winter ahead is not going to be as nice as the winter just passed.
Oh, is that what you're hearing, that it's going to be a rough winter as far as the weather? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I tell you, I just got a note from a friend up in Wisconsin right before we went on the air. And he was telling me that his electricity bill was really high last month, and I'm in the winter up there, you pay a lot for your electricity as well. So I hope it's not a really cold winter, so you can keep some of those electric bills down, Barry.
Well, I hope so too.
Anyway, Barry, as I mentioned in the introduction, Labor Day is the beginning, traditionally the beginning of the election season. And Labor Day is on Monday, and I wanted to get your thoughts as we start another election season, this time between President Trump and Vice President Harris. By the way, were you surprised at all that, and I think we talked about this a few months ago, but were you surprised at all that President Biden was replaced, maybe not the way he was, but that he was replaced as the candidate in 2024, Barry?
Well, I certainly was not surprised, since 7 months ago, I wrote at least one, probably two or three columns in various places stating explicitly that he would not be able to last all the way to the election, that he would be out. So I knew it was there. Of course, as we've discussed, I knew him in the 1980s and 90s, so I knew him when he was more or less in his prime, and I knew how much he had declined, and it was very obvious to me and to some others, especially physicians, by the way, even physicians who were Democrats, they all knew
right. That
there was a decline. And so now, I knew he would make
it. Yeah, I remember saying that a few months ago and writing about it. I remember that. Were you surprised the way it was done? Obviously, it came after the debate, but were you surprised the way it was done, like on a weekend, and just the way it was done? Were you surprised by that?
No, I mean, they obviously had a strategic calendar for it. He didn't want to go, of course, between Nancy Pelosi and the Obamas. They made it almost virtually impossible for him to refuse, and his support was evaporating everywhere. The numbers were such that it looked like a Trump landslide and maybe a sweep of 8 or 9 Senate seats, and that was, of course, not tenable. So it was going to go. I didn't know when, and the later it went, more difficult, but they were lucky. They were able to do it just after the Republican convention, when the Mr. Trump had a very successful convention. He succeeded in He survived a very serious attempt on his life, and he handled it with extraordinary poise and enhanced his public image, and he was getting a little bounce of his own, and they timed it to head off his bounce.
Yes.
Of course, after Ms. Harris had her bounce, but the Republicans had the good fortune of getting the Kennedy Jr. endorsement and the Tulsi
Gabbard,
her endorsement, which sort of stopped their bounce. But as we will discuss this evening, this was a very unreal period.
Yeah.
When both sides had a...
Yeah. Let me take you back to the convention for a second, the GOP convention. As I think I may have told you in a previous conversation, that I was hoping that he would pick Marco Rubio or Youngkin from Virginia. I was surprised that he picked J.D. Vance. I didn't know anything about him, really. But I've been very impressed with J.D. Vance, especially the way he's been handling the media interviews. I mean, he's done a ton of media interviews, and he does them well, Barry.
Well, I was like you. I thought that Marco Rubio was the best choice that Trump had, but of course, and in some ways he might have been, but he wasn't going to fit into the Trump world view that was going, which is going to be a necessity in, if Trump wins in the next administration. Not that Rubio won't have a place, but I was not a big fan of J.D. Vance, but like you, I found him to be very impressive. He was exactly the person to counteract the misstatements by our Minnesota governor, Tim Walz, who became the vice presidential choice, his misstatements about his National Guard service. And Nancy Pelosi and our own Senator Smith went so far as to say, well, J.D. Vance has no military experience, because they didn't know what they were talking about.
Right,
and
right.
They were very embarrassed to learn that he not only was a Marine, but he had been in combat.
Right.
And he was in combat as a photographer. But as
right, he was in Iraq as a Marine, 2005,
right.
2006, sometime in that time. Let me go back to J.D. Vance for a second, because like you, I was not expecting him. But then, by coincidence, the same week that he was selected, I happened to watch that movie about his life based on his book. I have not read the book. We caught the movie on one of these services on cable TV or whatever. And it's a movie, but it was really an impressive life. And I became like, you know, my whole viewpoint about him became rather positive. You know, a guy who can go through all of that, obviously his grandmother being a great influence in his life, his wife, an absolutely wonderful wife. I mean, I kind of like the guy a lot. And then I've seen him on these interviews, and he is really holding his own. I mean, he is doing a fabulous job. So I think overall it turned out to be the correct selection, even though, as I say, I was not he was not on my list. So what
now
about
was,
go ahead. Yeah,
wait,
go ahead, Barry.
So Wednesday, he was in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania, which is, many people feel the Erie and Erie County is the bellwether county of the country in regards to the election. A number of journalists have written about Erie County, of course, I grew up there, so I know a lot about it, and I know it's very true how much of a bellwether it is. Anyway, he was there, and he was a sensation. Of course, the established media tried to poo-poo it, as they're doing with everything involving the Republicans, be it the presidential race or the Senate or House races. But the fact is, he connected up with Erie, which is a blue-collar city, essentially, in Erie County, rural and blue-collar industrial. And he was a sensation. And I think, as you do, that he will turn out to be a big asset. He'll especially be an asset in the very important key states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Right. Now, before we get to Governor Walz, before we get to the election with Labor Day here, let's talk a little bit about how the Democrat selected a vice president. I guess the conventional wisdom was Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania. That was the conventional wisdom. That was a done deal, again, based on the experts. And then I was on Univision a few weeks ago, and they were asking me who I thought the candidate was going to be, and I said it's going to be Tim Walz. And the reason I said that, Barry, is because I thought he was a lot closer ideologically to Kamala Harris, and that Shapiro would be like a little bit too much of a conflict for her. And I was right. It turned out to be Walz. So what can you tell us about Governor Walz? I can tell you my own personal impression, Barry, is that he's not a very good candidate, that he's not talking. They're not letting him talk. I think he does have a lot of problems with his military service. He hasn't explained it. He hasn't been asked about it, I guess. And I think he's a time bomb. I think he could prove to be a real problem in the campaign, especially when he debates J.D. Vance, Barry.
Well, Mike, I thought they were going to go with Governor Shapiro. And, of course, there was a few controversies involved, especially involving his views on the Middle East, which, by the way, were identical with Walz and everybody else. It's just that he was, of course, Jewish, and so he was able to be singled out by the anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian crowd in the Democratic Party in places like Michigan and elsewhere. And I also thought that the senator from Arizona would have been a reasonable choice. I never even thought Walz would. He emerged pretty late. And since I happen to know him, of course, having spoken with him many times and interviewed him and covered his campaigns. And I knew that even though he has won the governorship twice, his second run, he almost lost because he lost his rural and small business support. He's been a terrible governor. Everything from his lockdowns in the pandemic to his high tax, over-regulated policies made small businessmen and rural farmers and small towns creating all kinds of problems. He's a man, he's actually a fairly smooth talker, and he can speak well on TV. But he's, like Kamala Harris, he is trying to be something that he's not. He's misrepresenting himself. And he misrepresented himself not only, you know, no one argued, he served 24 years in the National Guard. There's no one thing has a problem with that. That was his service, and it's good that he did that. The problem is what he says, what he did. It was the same kind of problem that Joe Biden has. He kept exaggerating and misrepresenting what he did. He not only did that in regards to the National Guard service, but he has many problems. He spent time in China, and was accused of people who went with him of actually being very sympathetic to the Maoist viewpoint. He, as I told you, his record as governor has been very authoritarian, very anti-business, very anti-rural, and he was supposed to have appeal to rural voters. He has no appeal to Minnesota rural voters.
Right. Well, I saw the electoral map of when he last ran. I mean, he was a Minneapolis candidate. That's what he was. I mean, the rest of the state was red. But let me ask you a question about the governor, Governor Walz. All of these videos that we've seen of the misrepresentation of the military title and these videos that, you know, I think to an impartial observer, leave you with the impression that he did serve in Afghanistan or Iraq. Were these videos well known in Minnesota, or did they just come out?
Well, the fact is the Minnesota establishment media is just like the national establishment media. And they protected him. They never delved into his record. They certainly delved into the Republican candidate's record and went after. In fact, I just saw the person who ran against him last time, an outstanding physician politician. And he was pilloried by the media very unfairly. But Walz got a walk. So in Minnesota, when there all this stuff that's coming out in the national media, especially the conservative media, people are saying, what's this all about? We don't know anything about this. It reminds me of the conversations I had with my Democratic friends about Biden, breakfast or lunch or just be in a conversation. And I'd say, don't you see how much he's deteriorated physically and mentally? I said, what are you talking about? He's fine. Maybe he's a little bit slow, but he's 80, 82. There's nothing wrong. And that's because whereas you and I saw all those videos and we were, even though it was partisan, it was as plain as the nose on your face, that he was having problems and he was over his head in the office of president. But they didn't understand that until the debate. And then suddenly they saw what all the rest of us knew, had known for years. The same thing is going on. The reason I mention all this is because the same thing is going on with Walz. As far as most Democrats in Minnesota are concerned, Tim Walz is a terrific governor.
Right.
Of course, they have no problem with high taxes. They have no problem with authoritarian lockdowns and the liberal woke policies that he has been advocating and signing bills in legislation. They have no problem with that, and the fact that he wasn't really well vetted. I mean, you have to admit that they didn't do a good job of vetting him, because all these, it's not just the National Guard thing. That's only was the beginning. It's all the other things. His behavior during the riots here, you recall, during when we had those terrible riots, and he didn't even, we had our liberal Democratic mayor plead with him for National Guard support to prevent the riots, and he didn't, and the city of Minneapolis went up in flames. So I'm not surprised, and I think that there's not a lot of time out there, but I do want to tell you this. I don't think the vice presidential candidate really makes that much difference in either case. I do think, but maybe it's because I have a partisan view, that J.D. Vance slightly helps, mainly because he's very competent, and you can see that he could take the job if he had to, whereas I think there's going to be increasing doubt about Waltz, although I tell you, one thing that I didn't think you had it quite right was he's a very good talker. He's very good talk, giving you the impression that he's what you think you want. He does that very well, and he may get by with that. And I think you did make a good point why Harris chose him instead of Shapiro. Shapiro might have outshone him. Remember, Jimmy Carter Michael Dukakis picked Texas Senator Benson.
Right.
And Benson was the star.
That's right. I remember that quite well. We're going to take a break, but before we take the break, I just want to say one more thing about Governor Waltz. I believe that he will be. I agree with you that the vice president doesn't matter as much, but I think in the debate with J.D. Vance, these questions about his military service could become a real problem for him, because there's a lot of groups in the country, a lot of military families, who really hate that kind of person who exaggerates his military service. It won't cost him the ticket. I mean, he'll stay on the ticket, but I think it will probably hurt him a little bit. Let's take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about the election, the two primary candidates. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our great friend, the Prairie editor, Mr. Barry Castleman. Barry, I know I said something about the governor there before the break. Did you want to add anything or say anything about it?
Well, his latest way of dealing with all the misstatements is he says, I'm pretty lousy on grammar. I misspeak because my grammar isn't good. I speak like ordinary people do. I mean, that's the latest rationalization.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, that's what I heard too. But I don't know. I think that'll fly. That's one of those things that the partisans will react to it differently. But let's talk now about the campaign itself, the presidential campaign. It's Labor Day. Normally, this is when everything gets started. Where do you see it right now? I mean, give me your sense of where the election is, maybe some of the important moments that are coming up here in September. So just let me know where it is and where you see this going here in the next few weeks.
Well, first of all, I don't believe that it's that close. I think in terms of polling and the emotions of voters who are polled, it may be somewhat of a toss-up because of all the traumatic events that have occurred and all the And, of course, we have to concede that once they got dumped Joe Biden, they took a big problem out of the equation. As long as he was there, they were going downhill, and it was going to be a landslide election. So to some extent, whoever they got, whether it was Kamala Harris or anyone else, would have been greeted with a great sigh of relief, which it has, and a positive feeling, because just as in the case of J.D. Vance, Governor Waltz, and Kamala Harris, they are not really super well known. Donald Trump is well known. So he's the only one. The administration has not been a success. Our standing in the world is very fragile, whereas under President Trump, for all his bluster and all the things which turned off even Republicans, his style, no enemy of ours or any rival would have done anything, would have attacked us or done anything really dangerous, because they had no idea what he would do. He was very good at creating a sense of anxiety in our enemies and in pressuring them. He knew what to do. He was not timid. Biden is the opposite. He caves in. He gave billions to Iran, which is being used against us. He refused to stand firm, and then Iran simply took advantage. Now, I think it's pretty obvious that he made a mistake. The way he handled Afghanistan was a travesty. China, Venezuela, all those places, North Korea, we don't know. They don't necessarily have much respect for the United States. Although we're the world's great military superpower, we've allowed our military infrastructure to decline, while places like China have increased theirs. We've handled our allies very poorly, both Great Britain, Israel, of course. We're not doing the right thing there, pressuring them while they're trying to survive. And in domestic policy, we stopped pipelines. We didn't use our oil reserves. We created electric grid problems. We raised taxes. We've made it hard. There's been an incredible amount of regulations. And there, even though the stock market is a little bit up and some economic signs are positive, the public feels anxious about the economy. And if you ask that timeless question, how do you feel better today than you did 4 years ago? Almost everyone will answer no.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's a real burden for the vice president, isn't it? When she's trying to move forward, Barry, but she's connected to the administration, Barry.
Well, and her idea of solutions is exactly the opposite. It's even worse. Her policy ideas, this idea of basing things on alleged gouging. It's pure show business. They're doing all
they
do. They can't use the Social Security issue because they, and also another issue which they benefit from, abortion. President Trump has got it right, I think. He says, I obey the law. The Supreme Court has decided that it's up to the states. And if a state decides, wants to allow abortion, then that's the way it should be.
Right. Exactly. No, that's exactly right. Now, they have tried to make the abortion issue a big deal in this campaign. I guess their belief is that many women are going to vote exclusively based on abortion. Do you agree with that, Barry?
Well, as I point out, they're not even, the Republicans, even though they're privately pro-life in most cases, from the point of view of public policy, they are follow the law, which is in those states where the states say we want no abortion, there is no abortion. That's the popular, that's what the voters want. In those states like Minnesota, where the voters have decided they want it available, that's the law.
Right.
And so what's happening is the smartest Senate and House candidates, especially Senate candidates, because each House member really represents only a district, and usually that's one way or the other. But the Senate candidates and the presidential candidate are saying, J.D. Vance himself said, the president will sign a bill. And he won't sign a bill outlawing abortion nationally. What the Democrats are trying to do is say the Republicans feel just as they did 4 years ago, and of course they don't.
Right.
That's up to the clear. But yes, I think on a net basis, the abortion issue will hurt a little bit, especially in those states where there's an abortion question on the ballot. But in fact, a lot of things have changed. Not only abortion, but in terms of voter registration and voter integrity, a lot of, especially in battleground states, there's a lot of new laws in place to protect the integrity of the vote. The Democrats, of course, were so much in favor of open borders so that there would be illegal immigrants, some of whom would somehow manage to vote. If not now, certainly later. So their motivation was transparent, although they always denied it. So the election, and I'm aware we had David McCormick, the Senate candidate in Pennsylvania, was here for a fundraiser yesterday, 2 days ago, in Minnesota. And I heard him speak, and he pointed out that there's thousands of poll watchers, volunteers, some paid. People are going to be watching the polls, watching the vote counts. Going to be, I'm sure some attempts were made, but the unbridled attempts at alleged attempts at cheating in the last election, true or not, are not even going to be possible.
Right.
In many cases this time. So,
well, I can tell you, Barry, here in Texas, we just deleted a 500,000 voters who were actually voters who had died and were still on the rolls, and
right, I saw
roughly
that.
Another 500,000 who were not, legally able to vote for a lot of different reasons. So that's 1 million votes, or 1 million people on the voter rolls that different than than the last time that we had an election. Well, one more question, Barry, or one more topic I want to bring up. How important is this debate coming up in a couple of weeks? How important do you see that debate, Barry?
Well, normally I would say not terribly important, but this isn't a normal election. And Kamala Harris, her ability to be president is really totally unknown. In fact, most voters, while she was vice president, gave her a vote of no confidence. Now, she may be, you never know sometimes, in a debate, she may turn out to be more skillful than her critics think she will be. But, of course, she's up against the master. Now, even though he was the master debater, in 2020, when he debated Biden, he overdid it. And he created a certain amount of sympathy for Biden that I think contributed to the fact that that Trump didn't do as well as he hoped. On the other hand, in the debate that was just held, the historic debate, which in fact ended the Biden campaign, you'll notice how disciplined Trump was. If Trump maintains his discipline, doesn't get into a personal attack on Mrs. Harris, and baits the issues and points out her gets her to make mistakes and point out her weakness, it will be a huge impact, because it will be clear that she's not ready to be president of the United States. And that will decide the key voting group here is the independents and the non-aligned. You know, the fact of the matter is most Republicans, even quite a number of never Trumpers, are going to vote Republican.
Right.
And Republicans shouldn't have any illusions. Democrats, for the most part, are going to vote for Mrs. Harris. So what you have, and its numbers is unknown exactly. It could be 5%, could be 10%, could be as much as 12 or 14%. I don't know what that, either undecided or weak decided group, changeable is, but it's around 8 to 10%, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. And as each day, each week goes by, that number gets smaller. And things like the debate,
right,
will have, I believe, an outsized impact. And that's why, in fact, even though I said earlier the vice president doesn't matter, this time, even that will have a little more impact, how the vice presidential candidates and their debate goes. Because, in fact, there's only one candidate that everybody knows, and that's Donald Trump.
Right.
And I think a lot of people want him to be something other than he is. I think what he has shown, especially after the assassination attempt, a new level of seriousness of his own mortality, and I think that's given him a little depth and a little more stature. Certainly was evident in his convention. If he can keep that going, I think the election is his to lose. I don't think the election is a tie. I think that the polling is a tie. The polling is not an election. It's a snapshot. And polling, especially the establishment polling, is distorted deliberately. That's why the only polls I pay attention to are Rasmussen and Trafalgar, because they, I think, I'm sure they have a little distortion of their own, but they have a track record of being accurate. Whereas the other polls, especially now, when it was useful to the Democratic candidates, be they in the presidency or the Senate, to have favorable polls. So the establishment media arranged, it's so easy to do with polls. You know, most polls aren't raw polls. They're raw numbers, and then the pollster alters them based on his assumption of how many Democrats, how many Republicans are going to vote, and what kind are they and all that, likely voters, unlikely. So it's so easy to manipulate polls. And I believe, and I'm not alone in believing, that many of the pollsters today are manipulating their polls, which is why you're seeing Kamala Harris even as high as 4 or 5 points ahead.
Right.
No, that doesn't mean to say that Donald Trump is 4 or 5 points ahead in the polls. I don't think he is. And remember this very important point, Silvio. In the national polls, which are not very useful anymore, because this presidential election is about electoral college, if the Democrat is ahead by 2 or 3 points, they're probably going to lose the election.
Right. That's correct, yeah.
Remember, Hillary was 5 points ahead, or 7 points ahead, and Biden was 5 points ahead, and it was a virtual tie. Now, they won the popular vote, but this is not a popular vote election. So the only polls that really count are the state polls. I wouldn't even look at another kind of poll, other than to see maybe if you were interested in how the popular vote were going.
Right.
But we're overweighted by California, New York, and Illinois, where the Democrats have margins. So so I don't believe this is necessarily going to be a close election. It may be relatively close, but unless the Republicans make a big mistake, or the Democratic ticket has more success than their history, their personal records show, meaning Harris and Waltz, who have no record really of great success, unless there's some kind of unusual surprise in that regard, it's the Republicans to lose. The other thing, and final thing I want to say, I did write in a recent piece, the only thing that would truly surprise me between now and Election Day would be that there would be no surprises.
Right.
More surprises. This has been a year when surprise twists and turns, whether it be assassination attempts or Biden withdrawing. So many things have happened that have been little shocks, little traumas. You have to expect there will be more. So there is a certain element of uncertainty. And so nothing, the election of Donald Trump is not a certainty, because you never know. And of course, we may have an international crisis, in which case Kamala Harris will have a problem, because this is not the strength of the Biden-Harris administration. As I pointed out earlier, they've botched virtually every area of our foreign policy.
That's correct. No, you're exactly right. Well, Barry, we have a pending chat in a few weeks. I'd like to do this with the U.S. Senate like we've done a couple of times. So let's do something maybe after the debate and talk a little bit about the Senate and the state of the race as we get closer to October 1st. But as always, I want to thank you so much for giving me your time and all the information. It's always a great honor to talk to you and to take in all your wisdom, which you have plenty of. And I always enjoy listening to you, Barry. Thank you so much.
I always enjoy talking to you. I don't take myself as seriously. I've made my own share of mistakes. As I've told you before, I in the past I've tried to make a lot of predictions. I've had some success. But this election, I'm trying to avoid making predictions, because even though I said it's Trump's to lose, Republicans to lose, nevertheless, you never know what's going to happen between now and Election Day.
That's right. You're exactly right about that. It looks good, but you still have to, whoever it was who said that you got to get the 27 outs, and the same is true about this election. Barry, have a great evening, and thank you so much for your time. It was absolutely wonderful.
Right. And I want to say, next time we'll talk about Aaron Judge.
Yes.
And his quest.
Yes, absolutely. You read my mind. As we get closer to the October 1st, and we'll have that to talk about. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Okay.
All right, Barry. Good night, and thank you for your time. Our good friend, Barry Castleman, talking about this election. Always enjoy chatting with him about it. He's just a wonderful man with a tremendous amount of information, as you can hear tonight. We'll do another show with Barry about the Senate sometime over the next few weeks as well. The Senate, of course, very important, as always, in these elections. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later. We will talk to you later as soon as I can get this music on. There we go. Here comes the music. Thank you for listening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.